Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Well, good morning to you. 9:08, almost 9:09 here on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. It is Mayor Thursday, and we don't have a mayor in here today. But we do have a couple of studly dudes here. Jeremy Redd, who is the city manager of Washington City. Hi, Jeremy. How are you?
Good morning, Andy. I'm well. How are you?
Great. Thank you for being here. And Matt Evans is the fire chief for Washington City, an appropriate time of year with seemingly the whole state on fire right now, Matt.
It does seem like that, for sure.
I mean, there are fires everywhere. And we're getting a handle on the closest one. But, man, the fireworks season, dry grass, lightning strikes. It's supposed to be monsoonal moisture, whatever, coming in. But with monsoons comes lightning strikes, too, Matt. And so we've got our work cut out for you. Well, you've got your work cut out for you.
For sure. So. We're hoping for some water soon.
Yeah. Yeah, with monsoons, it's supposed to be rain, right? Where's the rain? I'm not seeing any yet.
No, it just seems to only bring the electricity.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, thanks, guys, for being here. Appreciate it. And again, full disclosure, my wife is the executive assistant to the city manager and the city attorney and mayor for Washington City. So, yes, I know these guys actually pretty well, more so than I know other city employees in other cities. But, yeah, thanks for being here. And, by the way, Jeremy is my wife's boss, so he could fire her at any moment. Although it's worth noting she has her 30 years in now, so if he does, so what, right?
Well, sometimes it feels like she's my boss. She tells me where I need to be and when and what I have to do every day. So it's good.
That's a good executive assistant, right?
Really good.
Right?
She's excellent.
Keeping an eye on
really
stuff
good.
For you. So I wanted to talk, if it's okay with you, Jeremy, talk about the city manager position a little bit, because I think there's a lot of misconception around the state of Utah. Almost every city, I think except Salt Lake, and maybe there's one other city that has a full-time mayor, almost every other city in Utah has a part-time mayor, which means they need somebody to manage the day-to-day of the city. That's where the city manager comes in, and that's why you're here, right?
That's correct. So I work really closely with the mayor, and the city manager works with the mayor in their community. The mayor gets to be the face of the city, and that's wonderful. That's the way we want it. And then the city manager helps with all those administrative tasks, the day-to-day.
So you're the under-the-radar, doing all the work kind of guy.
Manages all the employees, hires, fires, makes sure that everything is lined out, the budget, all those kind of things, so that the mayor can just do fun mayor things.
Yeah.
That's my job. So
and people don't know this, but the mayor does not even have a vote when policies and things come up, unless there's a need for a tie break, which would mean that of the five city council people, one of them would have to be missing for there to even be a tie. So
yeah, I think our mayor in the last 4 years has voted once I can remember.
Years,
so they don't vote often, but they exert influence in other ways.
That's what I was going to say. One thing about it, though, the mayor does conduct the meetings. They have a lot of influence during the debates on the different policies and things, and they do have a lot of control. And they're able to spend money. Right? You know, mayors spend money. We've seen that with all the mayors. But, one thing about our mayor in Washington City, he had no one run against him. So apparently the public thinks he's doing a pretty good job.
That's the way I read it. I think when you don't have people that come out to run, I mean, we like to see people get involved and get excited about city government. But I think if you're generally doing a fairly good job and people are happy, then they'll let you continue. So
now
that's the way I read it.
We had a few months ago kind of a little bit of controversy with the city council. We won't get into what that is, but what kind of position does that put you as the city manager in when there's a little bit of conflict on the city council? Do you just kind of stay back and let it resolve, or what?
Well, it depends on what it is, but absolutely, my job is to make sure that I'm working for the mayor and all five council members.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be tricky, especially if they have different priorities or different ideas.
Right.
But I make sure that they have the information they need. I sometimes get to be a peacemaker, try to help solve the problems that they're having. But in the end, I work for the group, not any one person. And so I need to make sure that whatever the group decides, that's the direction that we go. And that does put us in an awkward position sometimes. So there's people that don't want to go that way. But
right. But
working in a council is working in a group. And you have to, sometimes you're on the top end of things, and sometimes you're on the losing end. But we move forward with the group.
So tell us a little bit now about downtown Washington City. That's one of the things that Mayor Staley has really kind of carried a banner for. He wants downtown Washington City to be a place where people want to be. And you guys have made tremendous strides that way, correct?
I think so. In the last 4 or 5 years, we've really worked hard to try to acquire properties. That's the part that we've done so far. And mm-hmm. And just this last couple of weeks, we've now put out a request for qualifications for some
RFQ,
firms
yeah.
to help us design our downtown. And, you know, what's funny is I told my daughter this. We're working on Washington City's downtown. And she said, Dad, there's no downtown Washington City, right?
So we have
to build it. We get to build it from scratch. There used to be a downtown Washington City. You had the Nissen store. You had the burger mm-hmm. place. You had a downtown.
Right.
But that's sort of gone away with the widening of Telegraph and with different things that have happened. And, yeah, Washington really wants to build a downtown again. We want a place where people can gather. We want those local small businesses to come back. So that's where we're at right now is putting together a plan. I think in the next year to year and a half, you'll really start to see that plan take shape. Residents will get a chance to weigh in, let us know how they feel about what they want to see, and then we'll put something together that hopefully people are really proud of. We're excited about it.
By the way, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but McCray Hepler, who is known for doing stuff on what's happening in southern Utah, was actually had his video guy in there doing some footage of Heritage Hall and what's kind of the cool stuff that's happening in Washington City, and I believe that's in next Wednesday's video with McCray, so that'll be cool. That'll be coming out soon. So Heritage Hall was kind of the start of things, the remodel there, and just kind of a cool new feel there. Most people knew it as the old gym. It's not a gym anymore.
No, it's no longer a gym, and if you haven't seen it, I don't want to plug McKay too much, but
McCray,
go check that out. He'll do a really nice job showing people what it looks like. But it's been newly remodeled. It's a great event space for meetings, for weddings, and things like that. We really want people to come down and use it and start enjoying Washington's downtown.
And the city has acquired the church that is adjacent to the Heritage Hall with some weird stipulations of rules, I guess, with the church. You can't knock it down and start over. The LDS Church said, no, that's not happening.
I think there's a lot of history there. People have a lot of history. They, you know, they've had meetings there. They've had funerals there. There's a lot of history. Yeah. And so one of the things that we wanted to do, and in conjunction with the LDS Church, was to keep that building so that people still have that connection to their past. But it'll be repurposed. It'll be turned into something that's more mm-hmm. of a community space, a civic space. But we want to keep and preserve that history as well.
And then the city has acquired the old Nissen grocery store property as well?
The Nissen grocery store. We've acquired the parcel where the post office exists now, and then across the street. So all four corners
right now,
there.
The food trucks are there, and that's across the street there.
Yeah. Okay. So that's all temporary. But you know, you talk about the Nissen grocery store. That's been empty for decades.
A while, yeah.
And it's time to do something different with it, to revitalize the area. So we're excited.
Do you know, I guess you don't know yet because you've got the RFQ out, but will that area be, I guess they're going to knock that building down and maybe build something new there? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's likely that building needs to come down. It's been vacant for so long that it deteriorates and mm-hmm. it'll probably have to be torn down and have something built in its place that's modern. And there's, you know, again, it is early, but we'll work through the plan and let people know as we go. But I think you'll see something really neat and beneficial to the community go there.
There was, with Mayor Staley coming on every month, there was for a long time, and I think it's been a year now, but the complaints about the post office and the traffic and everything, they've kind of moved some things, and it's not as bad as it used to be, I guess. Is the post office going to stay there, though?
So the post office is much better. I'd say it's
much
a
better.
Much better situation than we had a few years ago. But they've moved a lot of their loading and transloading to other facilities. But mm-hmm. now it's just a retail post office. They do a fairly good job there. As far as them moving, we'd still like to see them build a new modern post office in Washington.
We would.
And so we'll continue to push them in that direction. We're their landlord now, but they still are the federal government. So we will work with them and try to find them a new spot.
Okay. Very cool. Thanks for the updates on downtown Washington City. And like, like you said, your daughter said, what downtown? What are you talking about? Well, hopefully there's going to be, it'll be a destination downtown, a place people want to be.
That's the goal, and I think we'll get there. It'll be something good.
Nice. Yeah. Now, one thing that Washington City has done over the years, for as long as I've been here in Southern Utah, 31 years, the 24th of July celebration is centered in Washington City. And Jeremy and Matt, too, if you guys want to talk a little bit about what to expect coming up next week.
Yeah, I think we do, I would say, the best 24th celebration in the county. A lot of cities don't participate in that. There are a few that do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've never been there, it's a great small town, Washington City feel, Pioneer Day. And, mm-hmm. and we tried to keep that feel. But yeah, it starts at 7 o'clock on the 24th, which is a Thursday this year, with breakfast.
It's a week from today, as a matter of fact.
It's a week from today. Yeah. So come out for breakfast, and then the parade starts at 8. It's a really cool Pioneer-themed parade.
Are you going to be in the parade, Jeremy?
I don't know if I'll be in the parade. Nobody comes to the parade to watch me, but I promise
you. I bet Matt will be, right?
The mayor and council will be in the parade, and that's what you want to see, right? You want to see those people. But
I think they come to see the fire trucks, so yeah. We'll make sure they're there.
And Matt, will you be driving one of those?
Probably not.
No,
we'll let the people that drive them all the time drive them.
All right. Not even the back?
Maybe
steering the
maybe
back.
With a, yeah. Okay. Pretend.
Okay. All right. So the parade is at, what time did you say? 8?
Parade is at 8.
8 o'clock. Pretty early. Then, that's good, considering how hot it gets here.
Yeah, you got to get people out at a reasonable hour so it's not so hot. But
right.
Then at 9 o'clock, they do races. We do booths in the park. We try to keep it, old-fashioned a little bit, right? So mm-hmm. Where else can you get a dollar soda and a dollar snow cone still? So
nowhere.
That'll happen.
Yeah.
So bring your kids out. It'll be a really fun family, very family-friendly event. A lot of fun for kids. A lot of, you'll have the little booths, the, like you used to.
The fishing. Yeah.
What is that called? The fish pond? What is that? I don't know. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
I know my kids have volunteered to help with that for many years over the years. So.
So we try to keep it that traditional feel and very family friendly. And then at night, at 10 o'clock, we'll do fireworks. I think it might be the only fireworks show in the county that's a sanctioned fireworks show,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
And that'll be at the community center, the ball fields in Washington at 10 o'clock.
Now, Matt, how do you factor into the fireworks show? Because it used to be the firemen would put the show on, but they don't do it that way anymore, do they?
They don't. We don't. There still are some communities that do that. But with all the changes and everything that you have to do and everything that fire departments are responsible for, it was just one of those things that is tough to keep up with. Yeah. So you got to have all your certifications, and it's another piece of training and all the things that go with it. So we in Washington, we choose to hire it out to professionals and let those that's what they do give us a fantastic show.
10 o'clock at night, right?
10 p.m.
Okay, very cool. Matt, I'm curious the relationship of firemen to this time of year and fireworks and stuff, because I guess I got old because somewhere along the way I'm like, let's just ban fireworks, the homemade kind, and so we don't start fires and stuff. But as our leaders have found out throughout the state of Utah, that ain't going to fly. In fact, for many years when I was a teenager, flying, the bottle rockets, those were outlawed, and you could only do the kind, you light up in the driveway or whatever, people used to go to Wyoming and buy, up when I was in Northern Utah, we'd go to Wyoming and buy fireworks, and around here they would go down to Nevada and buy fireworks because we still wanted them even though they weren't legal. But man, now, like I said, now that I got older, Matt, I kind of feel like, oh gosh, we're going to, I mean, right behind my house, we have a park that if a lit firework landed in that park, the whole thing would go poof, How do you feel about fireworks? Have you resolved the fact that they're here, no matter whether I like it or not, they're here?
Yeah, that's definitely in Utah. The regulations are really set by the state. So the state of Utah forbids any municipality from completely banning fireworks. And so we have fireworks. As you've stated, even back in the day, people are going to go buy fireworks and they're going to light them off. So we've come to that realization that we're going to have fireworks. We just hope people, be responsible with them and take accountability. Remember that if they do light one off and it lands in the park you talked about, they have to be responsible for that.
Yeah, yeah. And that literally could mean loss of life or loss of property and the expenses incurred with that. I mean, I don't want to bring it up, but if you lit a fire, lit a firework that caused a fire and someone died, you could be held criminally responsible for that. So just keep that in mind, folks.
Absolutely.
Matt, do you not sleep that night? I say that night, but it's actually, what, like 4 days where you're allowed to set them off?
Yeah, they allow 2 days before the holiday and then the holiday.
And then one day after.
Yeah. And so it kind of depends how it falls. So like the 4th of July, we like it when it falls like that because it falls on a Friday.
Yeah.
And so then it's usually just one big night and things are pretty quiet the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm.
If it falls on a weekday, then we tend to get the weekday and then we still have lots
going on the weekend.
And so it stretches it out for a lot more. But we put on extra staff at all the stations and you just expect to. We're usually pretty busy till 2 or 3 in the morning.
Now, tell us about restrictions, because I know we had some pretty severe restrictions on where you could set those off. Are there going to be restrictions in place next Thursday? Well, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
There are. So in Washington City, and you can go to WashingtonCity.org, and you'll find the fireworks map right there on the front page.
Okay.
And it'll show you areas that are restricted. So really, it's the areas that border the pieces that you're talking about. You know, if you have a lot of open space full of grass and all that stuff around the edges and down through the river, and it seems like it's a pretty logical map of areas that you really shouldn't be lighting fireworks off in. And that's the piece that the state allows us to do, is we can restrict them to those kind of areas.
Okay. If I don't live in one of those restricted areas, I'm okay to set them off in my driveway or in the street in front of my house?
That's correct.
Okay.
And that's usually what you find. Most of those areas are that are open to fireworks. That's exactly where you would be doing that, would be in front of your house and on the street, which does help to give you some safe space. But as you stated, some bad things still happen sometimes. Luckily, we don't see a lot of injuries, but we do see quite a few that do damage to their neighbor's property. And they're still responsible for that as well.
I always tell the story. I had a scoutmaster growing up. He had a thumb and a pinky and didn't have the three middle fingers. It was on his right hand. So you go to shake his hand and he would grab you like a claw. And everybody, it was always fun to see him shake someone's hand for the first time because they were like, whoa. But he blew off three fingers holding a firework.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not just fire as far as damage that way. And he had hit on that as far as the hospital's a lot busier that night as well, unfortunately, and with injuries.
Is there technology now, newer technology, that has made fireworks more dangerous or less dangerous? Or what do you think, Matt?
I think the availability, unfortunately, just like everything, you can get it even easier. You don't even have to drive to Nevada. You can just order it. And of course, the knowledge is out there too. You can find ways to make things that you really shouldn't be making. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to see things a little bit worse than it used to be.
Now run us through, Matt, if you will, for a minute. When there's a big fire, like the Forsyth Fire out in Pine Valley, you run a fire department in Washington City. You're, what, 30 miles from the fire, whatever it is? What is your role in this? Are you like us, where you're just kind of watching it, or do they ask for your help, or what happens there?
Yeah, initially with a fire like that, anything in the county that grows in that initial response will be everything locally. And so with that fire as an example, till Sunday. So that fire started on Thursday, and it wasn't till Sunday that their state and federal crews showed up to take that over.
Mm.
So it was all the municipalities that had crews and apparatus up there. That were working that fire, including Washington.
Okay.
So Washington had two fire engines, the large style working some structure protection, and then two of the smaller grass truck engines that were up there with crews. And most of the municipalities from the county were similar and had crews up there. And that was who was really doing that work initially. And then they're able to get their teams here, but that takes a few days, of course, and then you start getting those resources show up, including a whole team of people to command the incident and run it, and everything else from catering companies to, you know, feed the few hundred people that are up there, and restroom facilities and all that stuff. And so that all stands up, but it takes a few days for it to happen. And so it's really the local communities helping each other. There's really, and you know, on September 11th showed that the largest fire department in the United States needed help.
Yeah.
So there's really no way for any community to staff for every emergency.
Right.
And so it's really a daily occurrence that that cities are helping each other with emergency services.
Now when the feds show up, they don't big time you, do they? They don't come in and say, "All right, you local yokels, go home. We got this now." Or
no, they're really good, and most of them that you see are from around here as well. And so it's usually people that we know, and relationships are always good. And at the end of the day, everybody's there trying to do the same thing, you know. Especially at that, everyone was up there working hard to try to save people's houses.
Now you have your neighboring fire district is the Hurricane Valley Fire District for you guys. How do you work with them? I mean, are they just, you kind of help each other when you can and that kind of thing? Or
now we actually have a different relationship with Hurricane Valley than you see in most departments. We work really closely with all the departments in the county, but with the fire district, we have a station that we jointly staff there in Coral Canyon. So it's half owned by Washington City and half owned by Hurricane.
Really?
Wow. And there's a couple of people from Washington there every day and a couple of people from Hurricane. And if the call's in Hurricane, then it just goes that direction and everyone goes there. And when it's in Washington, they go that way.
Well, all we know as citizens is put the fire out, please. And you do. So we love it. All right, I'm going to get a weather and commercial break in here. We're talking with Jeremy Redd, who is the city manager of Washington City, here for representing Mayor Staley, who couldn't be here, and Matt Evans is the fire chief for Washington City, and that they both work with my wife, and I don't believe ever said anything really mean to her, right? Because we don't need to.
I wouldn't dare.
No,
I wouldn't dare.
Well, and you don't have to worry about me. She'll beat you up herself.
Exactly.
So. We'll take a weather break. Be back with more after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, welcome back. We're talking Washington City today on the Andy Griffin Show. City Manager Jeremy Redd is with us. Looking good, Jeremy.
Oh, thank you.
Looking sharp. He's svelte. I think that's the word, svelte. You're thin and muscly and athletic looking. And I'm trying to get my wife a raise in case anybody wonders what I'm talking about.
She tells me I have a look for radio, so that's good. You can say whatever you want today.
She tells me I have a voice for newspaper, too. And I'm like, what does that mean? That's not very nice. I don't know. But Matt Evans is here, too, the fire chief. And we were talking a little bit about fires before we went to break and some of the responsibilities. So right now, Matt, there is a fire. There's a big one in San Juan County. There's a couple just across the border in Arizona. There's one in Utah County. I mean, there's fires everywhere. As a fire chief, what do you do when you see all this stuff? Because a lot of it you really can't do anything about, right?
No, a lot of the stuff that's away, they have that's farther away, they have teams there. Like we said, even the one that was here locally in the county, we help with. But typically, just in that first while, for two or three days until they get teams in there,
they're
set up to do that.
Can you explain the whole teams thing? Because I kept seeing on the news level 3 and level 2 and all that stuff, and I was like, I'm not sure what all that means.
Yeah, they have different qualifications for each of those. So when they talk about bringing in a level 1 or a type 1 team, that's the highest level. So
those are the guys that do all over the country.
Yeah, it's really big. It whether it's the scope, whether it's the complexity of the incident, but these are folks that have worked their way through. So they probably started on a type 4 team, and then incident management team, and then they have to do some work with that. So those smaller, less complex incidents, and then work their way up.
When a fire breaks out and it burns some structures, that seems like that's like the number one thing for you guys is to obviously the protection of life first, but also then the protection of homes and other structures is something that you guys take pretty personal, don't you?
Oh, for sure. That's the of course we know that just like you mentioned, you know, the weather's going to do some things, and if you get dry storms coming through, things are going to happen, and you can't always prevent those. But trying to prevent the true loss of people's property. There's always things in there that aren't replaceable. And you're right. Life is definitely the first thing, not getting people injured and right. losing that, but then also their property and being able to save that.
What happens when, there's an evacuation order, but people won't leave? Have you ever run into that as a fire chief?
We ran into that, and even on the fire here locally, there were lots of people that didn't want to leave.
Yeah,
it makes things really complex because life is, as you said, the most important thing,
and you're racing against time too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming.
Yeah, it's definitely coming, and now we have people there that we have to worry about and try to help, even though. We're trying to coordinate and take care of it to not lose any property, which makes things takes out one piece of that pie, something you don't have to worry about if everyone did evacuate. And then it also conflicts as they're trying to move around and getting in and out is pretty limited. And we're bringing in big trucks and trying to move them around to save those structures as the fire's moving through. And we got people that are still there in the way.
Does the government have the right to tell them they have to leave? I mean, I hope it never comes to this, but would you say get the sheriff in and say we're physically taking you out?
They can, just as you stated, we try not to do that, and the sheriff's office was up there and they were extremely helpful through that whole process as well. The legal aspect of that would be under exigent circumstances give you the authority to be able to do that in case of an emergency. But like you say, you definitely try not to do that. It's at the end of the day, it's their property and we still understand we live in America too.
Yeah.
And we surely don't want to see anybody get hurt. But they have some rights.
That would be an interesting, especially say you're in the middle of town, you're like, what, you know, 80 things would have to burn before I get here. And you're like, yeah, but better you go somewhere else and let us do our job, I guess.
Yeah, the tough part with it is most people don't understand how quickly it moves.
Really don't, no.
It, you know, they talk about as that moves through with a little bit of wind, you can move a football field in under a second.
Wow.
And so you can be a long ways away and you still only have a minute or two to get out of its way with the speed it moves.
I noticed on the wire this morning you were talking about some of the Arizona officials want an investigation as to why they didn't protect the Grand Lodge down in Grand Canyon better and stuff. And I kind of, as you say that, I'm thinking these officials probably have no clue what really happens when you have 40-mile-an-hour winds.
No, they don't. And when it moves so fast. And then you look at the area that is, too, and the area is very well preserved to you know, still be nature.
Yeah.
And so there's not what we like to call as defensible space. So you get a little space around it to where you could have crews in there to defend it. But when it's completely surrounded by the fuels that it has and the trees, which is what you want. That's why you wanted to go visit that area.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. But the flip side is when something like that happens, it's especially with the wind, you really can't stop it.
Have you ever, I got me to think about defensible space, and we've had the flip blitz where a lot of us are taking our grass out and putting, desert-friendly landscaping or artificial turf. Does that factor into any of this as well? I would assume this somewhat petroleum-based fake grass we're putting in would burn, wouldn't it?
It can, but it's not as bad as far as it goes. And so either grass is pretty useful, and we would consider it in that defensible piece. If we look at the incident that we had here locally, you know, obviously we lost 12 structures up there.
Yeah.
And those were tucked into nature a little bit.
Okay, they're trees all around them and everything.
All around them. Yeah. And the areas where we were really able to set crews up and keep fire from those structures, they had some space around them. They had some, just as you said, some landscaping that some people, you know, would much rather the natural stuff. But when an event like that happens, it creates a different problem. And so having some of that desert scape is exactly what worked well and made it easy to save their house.
Yeah, that's tough, though, when you're setting up a cabin. I want my cabin to be in amongst the pine trees and you know, perfectly. And then something like that happens, and you realize why.
For sure.
Would have been better the other way, but it happens. And hopefully the people that lost homes and whatever up there have been able to sort. I mean, we're at the point now. The fire's not out, but it is pretty fairly well contained. But they've got to now deal with all the fallout of how to replace things. And some things are unreplaceable, as you know, as a fire chief. I'm sure you've been on the scene of many fires where it's like, hey, you're alive, you know. I mean, maybe you lost that photo album, or maybe you lost your computer, whatever it is, but at least you're alive. So
for sure. And it is tough. It and we understand that. Everybody has things that are just not replaceable. But yeah, at the end of the day, they're the most unreplaceable piece of we want to make sure is safe and good. And yeah, we can rebuild the cabins and all that. And they can do some amazing things to restore stuff nowadays, yeah. But there's still a lot of loss there, and it's very personal.
I don't know if you knew this. My grandpa was fire chief at American Fork for 20-something years. And, in fact, I have a little story about the parades and fire trucks. So I grew up in Texas, so I wasn't around my grandpa up here in American Fork. And we came to visit. It was 4th of July, and he invited me to ride with him in the fire truck. I was maybe 10 or 9 or something like that. Well, I was, because I didn't know my grandpa very well, and I didn't know American Fork at all. I told him, I said, no, I don't want to do that. And then I'm standing there in the crowd, and the fire truck goes by, and he's blaring, he's got the lights on and blaring the horn and the siren and everything. And that was one of my first real memory of regret. I was standing there going, what an idiot. Why didn't I ride in the fire? That would have been cool. But
that would have probably changed your whole life path.
I could have been a fire chief.
Yeah, you had to go down that road.
Yeah. Instead of radio. My first choice was to be the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. That didn't work out so well, especially in Little League football when they put me on the line. I knew at that point I probably wasn't going to be the quarterback anymore. And then the second choice was to be the radio or TV voice for the Dallas Cowboys, and that didn't work out. But I did get to do some radio, so that's good. That's good. All right, well, let's do this. Let's take one more commercial break. When we come back, we'll bring Jeremy Redd back into the conversation. He's been kind of observing here in the last few minutes, but we'll bring Jeremy back and talk about some of the cool stuff that's happening in Washington City when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
And my wife didn't tell me this, but it was kind of an unspoken thing. I'm not supposed to ask anything really hard of her boss, because then she would suffer the repercussions, perhaps. So, Jeremy, I've just been throwing softballs up here for you, and you've been hitting them out of the park, man. I appreciate that.
Helps my batting average, so I like that.
Jeremy Redd, City Manager, Washington City here, along with Matt Evans, who is the Fire Chief of Washington City. And before we do anything else, we should talk about firework safety again one more time and just let people know that, we're a tinderbox right now here in Southern Utah.
We are, for sure. And we have a few things that always happen. Of course, we do tend to, on the 4th, it was a little windy, and so that pushed some of the aerial pieces up and over, and we had a number of fires. Luckily, nothing that took off super big. You know, we always like to say, you know, sometimes even though you have a plan, if the weather's not permitting it, and we have really heavy winds, it's probably going to do some damage somewhere. And we saw a lot of that even to neighbors' property, with some of the hot embers landing on their cars and doing damages and some things like that didn't take off. And then some of the typical things that happen every year, even though we kind of feel like a broken record. We say the same thing every year.
Yeah.
Which is first, just because you lit it off and it sat there in the street for 5 minutes, don't throw it in your garbage can, and then go put your garbage can by your house. Yeah, inevitably, every year, we'll have a few fires, when they dispose of those really too quickly, and there's still some heat in there, and at about 2 o'clock in the morning, it finally takes off and lights up the house or the garage.
What would you recommend instead? Just maybe letting it sit longer, or putting them in a bucket of water, or what?
Yeah, we would recommend either soaking them in a bucket of water for what we would say would be a couple of hours, or just keeping them sitting somewhere. So let them sit right there in the gutter until in the morning. And then, by then, you know that it's all cooled off and everything in there is out, and then you can dispose of them. Just don't throw them in that plastic garbage can with all that combustible material.
Not yet. Let it cool. Yep. How long have you been in Southern Utah, Matt?
So we moved down here about 12 years ago.
Okay. I remember, I don't know how long ago it's been now, but the fireworks show put on by Mother Nature, by God, the lightning show, was quite often better than the actual fireworks show that was put on because we had some pretty spectacular storms. It doesn't seem like we've had the big monsoon lightning storms in the last couple of years that we used to have, does it?
No, it really doesn't. It seems like if something happens, it might happen once, and that definitely seems far and few in between, and seems like you get just a little pocket burst somewhere in the county, even kind of thing, and that's about it.
We could definitely use the rain. Definitely could use the rain. I think I have a little app that tells you how much rain accumulation for the year is for different locations around the county, and it's not good. We're like at 1/4 of what we usually are for this time of year, and the only thing that could rescue us is if we have some monsoons show up and we get a lot of rain, but unfortunately we're not there yet. So,
yeah.
But Jeremy, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, so you were the city manager in Blanding, right? Before you came to Washington City?
That's correct. Seems like a lifetime ago.
How big is Blanding?
About 5,000 people.
Okay. So you went up about, I don't know, when you came to Washington City, what was it, 30,000, 25?
Probably around 30. Yeah.
Yeah. 30
plus.
Big step up for you. How many more employees are you responsible for now compared to then?
It's at least 10 times the number
that
I had when I was there.
Okay.
In fact, small towns are nice because you know all the employees, you know their families, you know their
names. And you grew up there, right?
I grew up there.
Yeah.
Lived there for 20 years, and so that's a benefit. It'll also be a curse, right? They all know me. They know where I live. They all have my phone number.
I remember when little Jeremy used to.
That's right. Exactly. So, but no. I mean, I've enjoyed it here. I've been here 5 years now, I remember I came on your show the week that I got here. So
yeah,
it was my initiation into Washington City.
Wow.
But yeah, it's been 5 years, and this feels like my home now, which is nice. Been a very, very great move,
really nice.
Great people, wonderful place to live. So
it is. A lot of city managers are ambitious as far as moving up to the next bigger city. Do you feel like that the future for you is Washington City? Or I mean, that's not really a fair question to ask because you don't know. But
it's a fair question. I'll answer it. Absolutely. As long as they want me here, I'd love to stay at Washington City.
Nice.
It's in that perfect spot.
You know,
you want a city that's growing. You want a city that's challenging and fun. And we like that. And I still get to know a lot of the employees. And I think if you go any bigger, you lose some of that. So I think it's a really sweet spot that Washington City is in right now with a ton of growth and potential and exciting things happening. So I want to be part of that. I hope I get to.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your staff. How many department heads, like if you have a staff meeting with just the bosses, how many people are in that room?
We've got about 15 that
would
come to that meeting. And we do that weekly for a couple of hours just to try to get our hands around what's happening in our city and what each department needs and coordinate.
And as a manager of a big, you know, obviously a city, a big corporation almost, if you will, you kind of have to let your department heads do their thing, right? You direct them and they direct their people.
Oh, 100%. So we're over 500 employees now between, you know, golf course, rec center, parks, fire, police, streets, all the different departments. So there's no way that I can have a handle on everything that's going on.
So you can't even know all those people, right?
Yeah. And I don't have an assistant city manager, so I tell my department heads I have 15 assistant city managers. I mean, Chief Evans is really on his own a lot. He's got to run his department. He has to act like the city manager of his own department in almost all ways. And then I try to coordinate those departments when they need to interact with each other. And like I said, for budget, for things like that. And then when things get really bad and they don't know what to do, then I get to help a little bit to try to figure out what we do from there. So
that's pretty cool. I mean, you really have to trust your people, right? You have to get people that you know you can count on, right? Like Matt.
Yes, absolutely. And we have great department heads. I mean, we really do. To a person, they are fantastic. They do a great job. They care a lot about the city and a lot about the people they serve. So that's what we're looking for. We want people who want to be here and want to serve the residents and make their lives better. So that's what we look for.
Very cool. Washington City, what are you up to 30? 5,000?
I think we're closer to 45,000.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
We measure it in three or four different ways. But if you take the number of residents we have, the number of water connections, so on one of those busy holiday weekends, we're 45,000 people easy in Washington City.
Unbelievable. Wow. How does this whole, you mentioned on a busy weekend, that got me thinking about short-term rentals, and that's been kind of a hot topic here in southern Utah for the last few years. What is Washington City's policy? Is it got to be zoned to be able to have one of those? If I own a home in Washington, can I just say, hey, I want to turn it into a short-term?
You can't do that legally.
Okay.
So some people do, but there's a crackdown. I mean, you know, we have a housing shortage as well in Washington City. So
right. We
don't want all of our homes to be short-term rentals. We need places for people who live here to live as well. But yes, you have to be zoned. You have to be in a certain area that's zoned for short-term rentals. Then you have to have a business license. You have to work with the fire department. They come and they do their fire inspections to make sure that, you know, it's appropriate for the number of people that are going to be staying in your rental. You need to have parking. You need to have all the things that
right.
make that successful.
And most homes don't have enough parking if you want to rent it out to 20 people.
That's correct. So that's why we zone them, and we have areas that are zoned. And so if you want to live in a neighborhood, you, for the most part, won't be near short-term rentals. But if if you're somebody who it's their second home, you might choose one in a short-term rental overlay area so that, you can rent your house as well. But
okay.
Yep.
Okay. Matt, we've got a minute left, so I need a quick answer on this one. But my daughter and her new husband, they settled into their new apartment. It didn't have an air conditioner. They ordered one but didn't install it correctly. Anyway, long story short, they nearly died that night because of CO2. Fortunately, they had a CO2 detector. I never thought of that as being something important, but it saved their lives. I guess that is important, huh?
It is important. It's actually a part in the code now.
Okay.
Most people know that we've had to have smoke detectors in your house for a long, long time. Those will have to be all interconnected. And now when you build something today, there's got to be at least one CO detector in there. Unfortunately,
CO2? Did I say
CO2?
Wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It's one of those things you don't know. It starts to make you sick, and unfortunately, it puts you to sleep. And so, like you said, it does cause a lot of deaths because it ultimately puts you to sleep and you don't wake up.
They were getting ready for. They were about to go to bed when the CO2 started beeping at them, and they realized. And then, of course, the fire department came and said, "You need to get out now," because I guess it was 200. Is that parts per million
parts
or whatever?
Per million.
Yeah, and at that point, yeah, it was pretty scary. So. I am a big believer in those detectors, Chief. So, guys, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for coming today. It's been a pleasure. I love hanging out with you guys. Usually you hang out with my better half, but today you got to hang out with me. That was cool. So, thanks for coming on. We'll be back tomorrow on the Andy Griffin Show.